listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hi.
Bruce, can't hear you. Nope, nope.
Uh-oh.
No cam here, Bruce.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Shelly. Yes.
Okay.
We'll get this show started. I think what Bruce did is sign out and sign in.
Okay.
To get the volume going. But I'm excited about you being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, boy. Bruce has already filled me in some, and man, it's going to be fun.
Yes.
He'll be right here.
I'm back. Okay, everybody.
Yay.
Well, welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. Bruce and Wayne with you. You know, from time to time, we're blessed to have guests on our show that have actually experienced federal prison. A few weeks back, we had the insurrection person on our show, and we got to hear her perspectives about, you know, her experience in federal prison, federal custody. But today, folks, we have a special guest with us that has even done more time, if you will, inside the confines of a federal prison, actually released-ish on home confinement early under the CARES Act, which is a privilege. She was able to release under the CARES Act, wear an ankle monitor, finish the duration of her sentence in the community, and now is beginning her supervised release, which is usually required post-BOP prison. So go ahead and introduce yourself to our guests.
So I'm Shelly Collins. I'm from Morehead City, North Carolina. I had a 30-month sentence at a federal women's prison. I actually only did about 15 months total of that sentence between CARES Act and First Step Act credits. So I actually just finished on July the 3rd, and I am actually on supervised release now.
Okay. So. Well, now, we had a nice little pre-production chat this morning, and I know that everybody's federal case is complicated, and we're not going to argue the merits of the case, right? That's
right.
Maybe talk a little bit about some of the ways that you had compromised yourself or whatever that led you getting into federal prison. Kind of talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So my case was actually a Medicaid fraud case. It was a total of $9.8 million in fraud against North Carolina Medicaid and inaccurate billings. I thought I was an owner of the company, but in actuality, I was only an employee. And the owner did not get any criminal charges. I was the only one from the company who got criminal charges. I got a target letter is how it started. The company got a target letter. The company, in all actuality, was the same person, was her. But they came after me and the company. And it started with I went and got a public defender because that was my only option. I had no money. Mm-hmm. And the public defender was pretty much, we're not doing a trial. You're facing too much. We're not doing this. I said, well, I really want a trial. Like, I really wanted to tell my side of the story. Now, after everything I've been through in the federal system, I would probably never go to trial knowing what I know now. But back then, I did want a trial. And so her and I didn't see eye to eye. So I was appointed another public defender. And the second public defender, she kind of told me, like, look, you know, at this point, you've already signed a plea with the first one. If you try to go back now, the judge is not going to be happy with you. They're going to say that you lied. During all this time, I had a polygraph. I passed the polygraph. The first lawyer I had actually gave me a polygraph because she didn't believe me. So she wanted to show me on paper that I was lying. And it turned out I wasn't lying. So that didn't work for her. So I had the passed polygraph. I had the private investigator. I had everything, all of these key points leading up to she didn't do it. You know, her name's not on anything. Her number's not on anything. So the second lawyer, we were at the police. She said, at this point, Shelly, let's just do the best that we can for you.
What was your guideline range?
So my guideline ranges was 30 to 37 months. The statutory, I think, could have been out to what they call 5 years. So I got the bottom of my guidelines.
But you didn't ask for a downward departure because of the polygraph and the other private investigation
they
stuff?
They didn't do any of that for me. I wanted to get like a mitigation specialist and all that. They told me that that was a waste of time not to do that. My first lawyer told me she guaranteed me probation. The second lawyer said, yeah, and I had all of this on recordings, but nobody would listen to the recordings of the lawyers telling me this. So the second lawyer said, you are going to go to prison. You're going to do time. We believe that the judge is going to look, you know, you have no criminal history. You have deep roots in your community. I mean, my entire community, thank God, backed me up. Not one person, you know, when you get sentenced to federal prison, most people just turn against you, not my community. They stood behind me every step of the way. I actually couldn't defend myself in the civil part of it. So I was served with, on Christmas Day, a $34 million judgment in a civil suit from the government. And in the criminal suit, I got 30 months out of the 30 to 37. So I got the below of the guidelines. My sentencing was kind of a little awkward because during my sentencing, the prosecutor said there was no evidence to pinpoint anything to me. But at that point, my lawyer had told me if I did not accept responsibility, that I would lose that acceptance. And the possibility of me going to prison that day was a real possibility. And I had not gotten my affairs in order, nor had I told my family goodbye. So at that point, I was, you know.
You took the hits.
I took the hits. And so I was sentenced on August 21st, 2021. Mm-hmm. I got my letter 2 weeks later to report to federal prison. They wanted me to report October the 7th. At this time, I had torn my rotator cuff and I needed surgery. So we were able to get a continuance for me not to report until January the 7th. Problem being, in that time frame, I still couldn't get surgery because we were at the height of COVID still. So we tried to get me one more extension not to go, but the judge wasn't having it. So I went ahead and reported to prison. The lawyer that I had at this time, they appointed me another public defender at this point to do like the appeal and all of that, because the second lawyer, she wouldn't withdraw my plea. So therefore, they had to appoint me somebody else to move forward. So once I had the third lawyer, he's from Durham, North Carolina, and he fought hard for me. He did everything he could to get me CARES Act. Because when I stepped foot into prison, I had the mentality of, I've got this. I'm not going to let it break me. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of struggles leading up to prison. I wanted to commit suicide. I thought my life was over. I gave up. I gave up. And when you're going through pretrial and all of that, you just get to a point where you can't take much more. You know, I had just gotten married. My son was in college. I have two stepchildren and I had just given up. I felt like I had failed everybody. I had fought and fought and fought, but nobody was fighting for me. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I came to the conclusion, you know, I'm going to prison and I'm just going to have to make the best of it. So that's what led me to where I started my serving my sentence. So it was a complicated journey. And the worst part was this started in 2016 and nothing ever happened until 2021. Mm-hmm. So I was pretty much told to go on with my life. The government didn't want me. And then 4 days after I got married, I got the phone call. We have a problem. I've negotiated a plea for you.
Wow.
And so that's where it started.
Well, that's a good overview and appreciate you sharing that. So
thank you.
So you finally went in there and COVID was still going. And so,
yes, we were at the height of COVID, and actually my third day in the prison was when we had our second death at the prison I was in.
Wow.
So that was a little scary to start off with because there were several deaths at the prison I went to. So I was afraid, to say the least, in the beginning. I was more afraid of COVID than I was of prison. I didn't really care. You know, I knew that I could handle the prison experience. It was, I don't want to get there and I don't want to die.
Now, did you, as part of your, okay, the CARES Act is something, y'all, that because of COVID, that low risk inmates could serve either less than half ish of their prison time at home under home confinement. In order to qualify for the CARES Act, you have to have certain risk factors for COVID-19 as spelled out by the Centers for Disease Control. So can you walk us through what COVID, if you want to share them, you don't have to, but sure. COVID risk factors did you have? You said your attorney helped you articulate that, or did you just put in and they just spat you out? Like how'd that process go?
So when I got to prison, my attorney, he was a little, it was a little confusing in the beginning because he really thought that I would go in and I would technically come right back out to home confinement because I had obesity at the time. I have the heart condition and I have lupus. So I had three of the risk factors. Now, the prison that I was at did not go by the CDC guidelines. They went by the risk factors that they had chosen. The facility I was at, the warden made it quite clear to everybody, she did not believe in CARES Act. She believed that we should serve our time. And it was very difficult to get CARES Act where I was. I was actually the last person from the prison I was in to get CARES Act and be released.
Really? Now,
absolutely.
Were you aware that the prisons had to get their numbers cut back? We had to cut people out. In other words, if Alderson had 2,000 women in it, I'm just pulling that out of my ear, that because of the COVID, because of the CARES Act, we need to get rid of 30% of those inmates on CARES Act that qualify to get those numbers down, right?
They were denying CARES Act right and left. I really honestly believe in my heart the only reason I got CARES Act was because my lawyer sent a CARES Act package to them. He basically was at the point, the prison said that it was going to be 25% of your sentence in less than 18 months to the door, or you had to serve 50% of your sentence and have the risk factors. So he kept explaining to them, he says there's nothing in the CARES Act about that, but that was BOP policy.
That was the BOP policy, right? Whether it was, you know, just a memo, an internal memo, but what you're saying, that's just not Alderson. That was everywhere. Okay, go ahead.
Right. So leading up to this, I actually, when I got there, of course, I had the torn rotator cuff. Luckily enough for me, the day that I was taken to I was taken to an outside physician because we did not have a doctor. I got to the point that I couldn't even raise my arm above my waist. I had no use of my arm at all. So when I got there, my unit team, because they were so short staffed, my unit team was the person who took me to the doctor that day. And wow. She asked me, she said, have you applied for CARES Act? And I said, well, my case manager says that I can't, I'm not at that point yet. And she actually looked into my stuff and was like, you're close. And I actually went to her with all questions towards it. My lawyer got to the point, he wrote a letter once weekly. I actually had video visits where I showed my family. And then at the same time, I broke my hand while I was there with no care. Wow. But I was able to show my family through my video visit that my hand was broken and all that. So they were able to communicate with my lawyer on stuff that I wouldn't communicate on the recorded calls with. So I hit my 25%, 18 months to the door, July 18th of 2022. I had gone in, I surrendered January 7th. So I hit my 25%. My case manager says, okay, I sent her a cop out. You know, you've hit your 25%. I'm going to send it down the hill. So I was good. I didn't go. I wasn't in her face. I wasn't asking her every day, have you heard, have you heard, have you heard? So finally, August came around. I gave them a month. 4 weeks, because I felt like that was enough time. So she's like, well, I haven't heard anything. So I went to the woman who is head of the unit team and I was like, hey, can you tell me? And she's like, yes, we approved you. So another 2 weeks goes by. I still didn't hear anything. So I went to the assistant warden and I was like, look, I was told I was approved for CARES Act, you know, in the middle of August. I'm still sitting here. You know, what are we doing? It came back up the hill the very next day. I signed my papers. My case manager has a way of, she always asks for 90 days out. You knew you weren't getting anything sooner. It didn't matter. The case manager I was placed to, that's the way she worked. So I signed it and she's like, well, there's still a chance RRM will deny it, but they didn't. 10 days later, I got my date and I came home on December the 13th of 2021, or 2022. So I served 11 months and 7 days of a 30-month sentence actually on a prison camp.
So talk about that before that lockdown that they had
Right. So when I came in at the height of COVID. I was put into the quarantine unit. The quarantine unit had 120 beds in it. At that point, there were about 98 of us in there, and they kept bringing people in. So for 5 months, we stayed in a quarantine unit because every time somebody came in, we couldn't get out. At that point, they were testing us once a month for COVID. At that point, they finally went to test us all out. They tested us out 4 weeks in a row. Every Friday, we got a test. Well, every Friday, somebody tested positive. But on that fifth week, after 5 months, everybody in that quarantine unit, I think it was 111 at that point, finally tested negative, and the compound went on green. When the compound went on green, it was a whole different story. I mean, we could go to the library. We could go to the gym. We could get our hair done. It was pretty much like a summer camp once that happened. Right. And at that point, I had been stuck in the quarantine unit. You know, we played cards. We did all of that. Then we were moved to our new units. I did stay with some of my friends that were in the quarantine unit. Mm-hmm. So really, everybody was so nice and accommodating. I really didn't have an issue with any women that I was locked down with. A lot of them were, I tried to put myself with people that were kind of in a similar situation as me, you know, women that were married, they had left home, you know, they had left their kids. I tried to stay with like-minded people like myself, and that kind of kept it on an even keel the whole time. Mm-hmm. I got a job in education, so I was able to help with the GED program. I also taught the resume writing class, and I taught business etiquette. So I was busy every day. I went to work at 8 a.m. and I was there till 3:30. So if you stay busy, it keeps, you know, it keeps the days going by a whole lot faster. Mm-hmm. So I think we had like 110 women get their GEDs in the time frame that I was down there. And we had a bunch of people write their resumes, even girls that thought all they had ever done was deal drugs. They said, what do I do? Well, I was like, you've got sales skills, so let's write you a resume. So I tried to be as positive as I could for everybody else, which was a lot from where I had come from because I was ready to give up. And now right. I'm as positive as I possibly can be.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. So the worst part, I will say, was we were locked down for about 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. The warden at our prison believed in mass punishment, and she loved to punish everybody. She actually would put orange shirts on the women that she felt were troublemakers, and they would walk around the compound in the orange shirts.
So so before you finish this story, mm-hmm. I worked a lot of men's institutions as well as Carswell. I did 6 years at Carswell. I opened Carswell, did 6 years. So I'm no stranger to female, issues. But anyway, in the Bureau of Prisons, the most important thing is the floors. Okay. On common areas. We spend probably millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars on floor wax and buffer pads. Right. Because the floors have to shine. Okay. And those floors have to be perfect. All right, go ahead.
So the air condition would go out quite often there. And right. When the air condition would go out, the floors would get slick. I mean, they would get very, very slick. Well, when they came to count us at 3 o'clock count one night, one of the guards almost slipped and fell. So the warden was convinced that we had gotten up out of bed and that we had mopped the floors with the perfume oil from commissary or olive oil, and that we had tried to kill the guard. So our punishment was our entire unit was shut down. All of our cubes were torn apart. They threw everything that we had everywhere. They strip searched every woman in the unit. They locked us down for 3 weeks with peanut butter and jelly and hot bologna sandwiches. There were no hot meals. We could shower every 72 hours, and that was it. We were to be quiet and not speak to each other. So we basically laid in bed for 3 weeks being mass punished for what they found out was actually condensation on the floor. But after 3 weeks and they realized it was condensation on the floor, we went back to normal. At that point, there were lines out the doors for BP-9s ready to go to the warden and BP-10s ready to go to regional. And they were pretty much like, well, you can write up whatever you want. They don't care. They already know about it. But you could definitely tell when regional and everybody was coming because it was the grass better be cut. The buildings better be clean. We had, of course, a lot of girls. We had a lot of smokers. We had the K2 issue hiding. I mean, so they found a lot of that. The unit that I was in, some of the girls were a little wild, and they found a lot of stuff in our unit. But I will say no other unit was ever punished like the unit that I was in for 3 weeks.
On the unit that you were locked down on, weren't some of those girls working food service or out counted or anything, or everybody was just locked down?
Everybody was locked down. So if you worked in food service, you still did not go to food service. Had to switch. They would have to just work all day.
They pulled off that detail.
They did. They pulled off the entire detail. We did not leave. We did not speak. We did not make a noise. If we did, it was going to be worse. And pretty much it was the warden wanted somebody to tell who was doing what. Well, on that case, nobody could tell because the floors were condensation, you know, and it was like, it was hard to explain, but she was always wanting somebody to tell on somebody. And it was like, you can't tell what you don't know.
Well, let me also ask you this. I'm just fascinated. So y'all have your usual count, your standing count at 4. How many census counts during the day? Were y'all counted more often?
So no, we were only in the end. During COVID, we were counted 3 times daily, but in the end, we were only counted at 4 and 9. And on the weekends, we were counted at 10 and 4 and 9. But during the week, they only had a count for those that were cottage maintenance. So if you worked in cottage maintenance, you were counted there. Otherwise, I believe we were counted at our detail.
Okay.
So
for those of y'all don't know, the count is a very important thing in prison. The count. Yeah. It's very important. The count has to match up. And
if the count didn't match up, they were looking under beds. They were looking in the tiny little closets, like anybody could actually fit in those. But they were looking everywhere. Because another story was one night, they had kicked out the bathroom window and ran to the unit behind them. But by the time the count was off and they went and counted the other unit, they were back. So they could never figure out why the count was off. But it was like, wow. The girls were always trying to outsmart the guards. It was hilarious. I stayed out of all that. I played cards. I watched TV. I read a lot of books.
Now, I want to broach this question with you in theory, because you were only there for so many months, and it was pretty much clear to everybody, especially once you got your CARES Act, that you were going to be packing out and leaving. But let's say you had been sentenced to 15 years, just for a second. Do you think you would have had to have been involved in a female relationship? Or how does that work? Is there pressure to kind of get into a family or whatever? Or is it harder to do your own time? Or
I mean, it was pretty much like when I got, it was like everybody, and I don't know, but everybody already had their girlfriend. That was like the way it was. There was never any pressure of that.
Okay.
One of my fears as being a childhood trauma survivor was the male guards that were there. That was never an issue. I never saw that. And I mean, I actually commend where I was at. I never saw any of that action. They were never inappropriate. The female guards were the rude ones, but the male guards were actually treated us with respect.
That's good.
I never had one that was difficult.
Well, that's good to hear. That's really good to hear. So,
and okay. The female guards, if you gave them respect, they gave it back. Right. So, you know, and I went in with yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir. I never had an issue with any of them. I spent the whole time, I was shot free the entire time. I never got a shot, no disciplinary action, anything.
Good. That's excellent. So yeah. No, for you to get with a girlfriend or have a girlfriend or somebody, anything like
no,
that?
No, we used the phrase that we were straight to the gate. Straight to the gate. You had to be indicted to get invited, and we were all straight to the gate.
What's the indicted one?
You have to be indicted to get invited.
Oh my gosh.
That was our phrase, and we were all straight to the gate.
Straight to the gate, but not gay for the stay. All right.
No, not gay for the stay.
All right. Woo! Now we're talking. What do you think about that, Wayne?
I love it. It's just so interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. So now you transition from prison. You kind of talk a little bit about the journey. I guess you had to furlough transfer to the halfway house, and they fitted you with an ankle monitor that day and sent you home. Tell us about that process. Go ahead.
Right. So I left. And one thing I will say, you didn't really tell people when you were leaving. A lot of girls kept it to themselves,
right.
Because if you did, sometimes they would try to get you in trouble right towards the end so that you wouldn't leave. For me, a lot of people had similar cases of me, had more time than me, had the same restitution amounts as me, but they were all denied cares. A lot of them were denied cares for totality of their crime, seemed to be the same thing that kept coming back. For me, I mean, I had a high restitution as well. So that's why I believe having that lawyer involved is what really helped me get the cares.
Right.
So I rode the bus to the halfway house in North Carolina. My halfway house is actually 3 hours from my home. Got to the halfway house. My sister came to pick me up. I was fitted with the monitor. I was given all of the rules, and pretty much I was like sent home right away. I mean, that was like an easy process. I mean, I was in and out of there in less than an hour. And
wow.
I came home. So then not even 2 days later, it begins. I mean, they call you,
Real quick, did federal probation go out to your house and do a home inspection before you got the bus ride?
Federal probation had done my home check way back in August of 2022, about the time that I was approved. The halfway house did not come out until the day before.
Gotcha.
They knew that I was coming, but they were so short-staffed, they didn't have anybody. But they had to check it before I could come home. So they came the day before.
Go ahead.
And then 2 days later, you know, it starts, they call you, of course, throughout the night, all day long. They call you to make, yeah, hi, I'm here. I always made sure I answered on the first ring. I didn't make them wait for me. I was doing everything I could to make the process simple.
Good.
And Friday morning, all we need you to come. It's time for take a, they don't tell you what you're coming for, but you know you're going to take your UA.
Take that urine. That's right.
So 6 hour round trip to get that UA. And that was every week, sometimes twice a week.
Did you UA every week?
Every week. And I didn't even have a drug charge. And then I found out towards the end of it that they're only really supposed to test you 4 times a month is the max. And they're not really supposed to test you within 72 hours. Sometimes it was every other day, but it was a lot. It was a lot of miles on the car. It was a lot of riding, 6 hours round trip. And I've talked to some people. It seems that halfway houses are different. I was at an Austin Wilkes halfway house. They were not as lenient, I guess, as some halfway houses. I could not like email if I wanted to go somewhere.
Yeah.
So the lawyer that I had that did the CARES Act for me, we tried to get me a compassionate release because at this point I still need surgery. They were I could never get to Carswell because they never had beds or they were always COVID. They weren't intake. Right. So at this point, you know, I'm getting FSA credits. I've literally got less than 90 days left on my sentence. He's like, let's try to get you a compassionate release and get you surgery. Well, yeah, that didn't fly. They didn't want me to go to the doctor because I couldn't have an MRI. I had to get the monitor removed. They didn't want to remove the monitor. Wow. Luckily enough, my halfway house saw what bad shape I was in. They actually removed my monitor for me to get medical treatment.
That's awesome.
They removed, Yeah, yeah. They removed my monitor for me to get surgery. Yeah.
Just so you know, compassionate release from an RRM perspective, it's not going to happen. Right. The RRC director, the RRC is Austin Wilkes is a private for-profit company that has a contract. So they're a subcontractor in the government. They have no authority to do that. The only person who has authority is the Residential Reentry Management Office. They're not good compassion. I mean, see what I mean? Like you're too short. And your medical condition, legitimate as it is, if you were like stage four or something like that, maybe, right? You're really doing some aggressive chemotherapy or some aggressive tumor removals and stuff like that, you know, then, and we see a lot of that. I mean, I see a lot of that on the consulting side. So bless your heart. I'm glad you tried.
Yes, we tried, but
Wayne's got a question.
Backing up this, man, you guys use all of these acronyms and I have no idea what they mean. But when you had to drive those drives a couple times a week or every week, what did you do when you got, was that acronym UEI or whatever, is that like a drug test or something?
It's a drug test. I was literally inside for less than 5 minutes, in and out.
You're kidding me.
No, 6 hours, in and out. That's it.
Good night.
At least once a week, sometimes twice. It just depended.
Now I know what it means. That's government work.
Yes. So, like I said, I was very fortunate that, I know that I was an inmate, but my case manager trusted me and the director trusted me. So they removed my monitor. They let me go to Chapel Hill to get my MRI. Mm-hmm. And actually, they didn't have any clips to put it back on. So I spent a whole weekend with no monitor on. But I answered the phone. I called them 6 times a day instead of 4. I had surgery. They did allow me to have it removed for surgery. They allowed me 2 days to heal. And then they put it back on. But at least they gave me that. I mean, you know, I could have not gotten anything.
Yeah.
But they were great with that. And, you know, the worst part was, like, if I wanted to go somewhere, like, let's say they called in a prescription for me, I couldn't go one block down the pharmacy. I would have to go 6 hours round trip to fill out an itinerary. And then I could come back and go to the pharmacy and pick up my medication if somebody couldn't get it for me.
And you were going to test positive for the medication, right?
Exactly. So, and I believe, like, I mean, I was on pain medication pretty much from the entire time that I came home. So they knew that I was going to test positive, but they were testing me anyway.
Right. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting. Let's really talk real quick about your first Step Act credits. Now for you, did it run 10 days a month for the first 6 months and then 15 days thereafter? How did you end up calculating your point?
For me, it was 10 days a month, and it was only running 10 days a month even after I came home.
Oh,
and
really?
I did a BP10. I did all that. And actually, what got me my credits was I emailed my congressman, and I had a discussion with him about my credits. He actually had me sign a form, and he reached out to the BOP on my behalf. So the very first update that we got, I got all of my credits, but they still owed me 15 days. But by him reaching out for me, I was able to actually get the credits that I was owed. And when he did that, if I calculate correctly, I got 10 days a month for the first 6 months and then 15 days a month thereafter.
Yes.
Then I believe, so I didn't get an update in May like most people did. And I believe that's because when it updated in April, it updated the beginning of May. I didn't have enough time for it to actually give me the credits.
Right.
So I knew, when June came around, I knew that, or July, when that update hit, I knew I was going to be an immediate release because I knew I was going to get the May date. And I remember reaching out to you, Bruce, and saying, hey, do you think that I'm going to get May and June? Because I had to wait for it to pass that time to get the full 15 days.
That's right.
And you said, yeah, I believe you will. And you were right. So they called me to do a UA at the halfway house on that Sunday before July 2nd. And I was like, man, I'm going to be an immediate release tomorrow. Is there any way I can come back tomorrow? And she was like, no, you got to come today. So I came and did my UA. And then the very next morning, you know, sure enough, my date had changed. I called them. I was like, hey, look, am I free? What are we doing? They said, we have to wait for it to update from RRM. Yep. Literally about an hour later, they called, said, okay, come on in. We're going to go ahead and release you.
All right.
So,
Hey, good for you, man. What a journey.
Yes. Huh? I tell you one thing, though. So when I came out, I got a job when I was at the halfway house and home confinement. I got a job at a restaurant. And I tell you, it's tempting. You know, it's hard. You can't drink. You can't do anything when you're in home confinement. And it is very, very tempting to not get that shift drink after work. When everybody else is having a drink and you've worked in a kitchen all day and you're tired, it was very, very hard. But because I see some people, like you said, are going back for violating, you know, but I mean, they could have come at any time with a breathalyzer. And
oh yeah,
I wasn't willing to jeopardize anything to go back. I was just so happy to be so close to freedom that I just wasn't going to jeopardize it.
fun story. I got to tell you. Anyway, I would come down from the regional RM office. I did an inspection, and there was this lady who was working in the halfway house. Said, "Well, we don't know about her, whatever. I knew it was her birthday." And she had a nighttime job, but I knew it was her birthday. Sure enough, I go out to where she was working. We follow her to a club, and just as she drank that Jello shot, come on!
Oh my gosh!
We sat in the back of the club. I let her get that couple of Jello shots down her.
Oh my gosh!
We had a good test when we went back. I mean, sometimes you got to make lemons when you have lemonade or whatever. But anyway, but I'm glad you didn't do that, right? That you're the right. Portrait restraint. And then plus you were married at that point or not?
Yes, I was married. I actually got married 10/10/20. And literally 4 days later was when I got the call that we have a problem. I'm negotiating a plea. So, yes. You know, but I'm very lucky. My husband, he loves me very much. He stood behind me the whole time I was gone. He loved me. He loved my child while I was gone. So I was very fortunate in that. And, you know, I've been very fortunate throughout the whole process. I was in a really bad place when I went in due to all the circumstances. But for the first time, honestly, in my 43 years of life, I'm in an excellent place. I'm not working in a restaurant anymore because I've spent all my life in a restaurant. I actually got a corporate job working from home. I applied to like 100 and some jobs. And I just didn't give up. And I finally got one. I found a Facebook website where she works from home. And I was, you know, applying for jobs daily. I'm back in the corporate world. I have a better job than I had before I went to prison.
So being a convicted felon didn't hurt that.
They are felon friendly. So, and I explained it. I didn't hide it. I explained it right from the beginning. And I feel like if you're more honest with people about it, it gets you a whole lot further. Yes, I did make this mistake. I didn't set boundaries in my life. Whether you think I'm guilty or innocent, you know, I know how I feel. Not setting boundaries in my life put me in a position where people took advantage of me and used me and tried to destroy my life, but I didn't let it destroy me.
So what boundaries do you have today that you didn't have before you went to prison and caught the case?
I know how to say no. I know how to say no. I know how to know. I've always known what was right and what was wrong. And now I speak up for myself. You know, I will say, even though the classes are kind of silly that you take in prison, the FSA classes, you know, the Assert Yourself class, the Women in the 21st Century, you know, those books, yeah, they're kind of crazy at the time, but there are things that I took from those books that did change my life, that have made me a better person, a better version of myself. And I'm very fortunate in the experience that I had. It could have been a lot worse. I believe it is what you make of it. And I made friends that are going to last me a lifetime.
I love it, man. I love it. That's, I just really like where your head is at with this, and you're not taking a victim stance, and you're not, you know, even though you probably could in some regards as it pertains to the prosecution of your charges, right. But then just you're going through the experience, making the most of it. You never got an incident report. You didn't raise hell while you're in on the inside. You came out, you got your ankle monitor, you drove the 3 hours each way. And then, you know,
I think part of your success and your happiness, you live in God's country.
Yes.
You've got the vinegar barbecue.
Midfield's
chicken, baby.
We do.
You've got the great food. I mean, goodness, I love North Carolina.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of people go into prison to lose weight. And, honey, we were jumping up and down every week when the Little Debbie truck was coming because we were keeping that BMI as high as possible. We were not letting it go down.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, I've been to a few fairs up there in North Carolina and had some of that real good food, real good barbecue.
But Texas Pete's not from Texas, that's for sure.
That's right. And I'll tell you something else. A lady up in North Carolina made the best pecan pie I've ever had.
Yes.
And it wasn't with syrup. It was a dry pecan pie. And she gave me the recipe. It's just the best ever.
Oh, so speaking of pecan pie, so how much supervised release do you have?
So I have 3 years.
3 years.
He actually told me, though, because I am the lowest of the low, as long as I'm making that restitution payment, he told me to make 3 payments. Because I am so low, pretty much he told me I won't see him. You know, he will check in every now and then, or I check in with him. But after I make those payments and he sees a consecutive pattern, that he would go to the court and ask for me not to be. I said, even though I have restitution, he said, nowadays you can sign a piece of paper stating that I would continue to make restitution after I was released, as long as I signed that paper. He felt like it wouldn't be a problem because I was so low, because I have no criminal history. I'm negative pattern score. And one thing about it is the other person who didn't go to prison in my case has paid back quite a significant amount of my restitution through civil judgment. So it's coming down.
So how much longer do you think, in a perfect world, would you have to serve?
We think about six to eight months. If that at all.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, I mean, you've really got to count your
luck. I got lucky. I got very lucky.
I mean, I got to tell you, man, to go in there and you got your CARES Act and get out and made it through, and you got some FSA on top of it, which was good, right? Some step-back credits.
Because I'll tell you, I was in a group of 100 women who went to the warden's desk for signature. Out of that 100, I was the only one who was approved in that group.
Whoa.
I was the last person. There was another 100 that went behind me, and every single one of them were denied. I was the only person in that group of 100 who was approved to come home for CARES Act. Before that, it had been March and April when the last ones were done, and I think there was maybe about 20 people who went home. But I didn't see very many people going home on CARES Act where I was at. It was just not. They denied everybody. I mean, and these were girls that were working with me in education, that were making a difference, that were literally had 5 months left on their sentence, and they were like, "No, totality of your crime." That seemed to be the general answer.
That's one answer, and then in all fairness, only 7% of the beds are female, and so anybody who had gotten out before, and there's a lot of ladies on ankle monitors with 2028 release dates, right? 2027, 2026. Well, if you only have 7% of your halfway house beds is female, and you already got some people with longer sentences, they're going to tie that ankle monitor up. You think they're going to buy more ankle monitors? No, they're not going to buy ankle monitors. The solicitation, the contract doesn't come out for 10 years. And so it's like booking a hotel. If this person's hotel is booked for 6 years or 3 years or 4 years, that room is that ankle monitor's taken up for 2, 3, 4 years. It's just as simple as that. I'm not yelling at you.
Exactly.
A lot of people don't understand when you look at this from 10,000 feet as an administrator, right? And you see what's really going on here. You are blessed. You should be kissing the ground, like you said. And I know you're humble about it. You did good. You did really well.
I'm very lucky. Very lucky. And then, like I said, that third appointed lawyer, he wasn't paid. And he fought for me. He fought for me, like, from day one to get home. I'm very fortunate for that. Right.
And you really don't see a lot of attorneys doing post-conviction work like that. I mean, there's some there. But they cost a pretty penny, $5, $10, $15 grand just to get a look at this stuff. So I'm glad that the Federal Public Defender's Office worked out in such a good way for you, and having, and you went through multiple attorneys, and they still worked with you on the post-conviction aspect again.
I feel like if I had had the third attorney who was appointed to me, I will say, Mr. Craven, if I had had him from the get-go, I might not have ever gone to prison, because he really was good to me. And I'm so grateful that he took the time to help me like he did, because I contribute my CARES Act to him. Had he not fought for me, I probably would not have been that 1 in 100 that got out.
And isn't that interesting? The Federal Public Defender's office is like a box of chocolates. You don't know
who you're going to get. Right.
Sounds like you got one of each flavor.
I did. And,
good for you, man. Good for you. Well, great. How are we doing on time?
The only thing that I wish was, I know this sounds crazy, but I wish I could have met Julie Chrisley where I was at, because I follow them everywhere. And I was like, that was the one thing I was like, man, if she comes, I wish she would come here. But that was my only thing, because I love the Chrisleys. So
you could have seen Martha Stewart if it was like 12 or 13 years ago.
I know. I sure could have.
Yeah, there's
lots of stories about her.
Leona Helmsley.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah, boy, something else. So, good stuff. Well, again, I really appreciate you, coming on our program. Hey, tell our viewers and listeners how they can reach out to you if they have any questions or anything.
Sure,
like that.
Absolutely. If you have any questions, my email is Shelley Collins, SHELLEYCOLLINS 509@gmail.com. And also, if you'd like to call me, you can call me anytime at 252-723-6226. And I'm happy to help, any way I can. I was actually talking to a girl the other day that's about to go in, and she's scared to death. She's leaving her babies. And I told her, even though it seems like this is like a terrible experience, after you've been through pretrial and trial and everything you've been through, this is the beginning of the end. Once you're in there, it's almost over,
Yeah.
And I think for me, it's the relief of, even though I have probation, it's over. My probation officer is so nice and so respectful. His job is to make me successful. And you can tell it. His job is not to put me back in prison. And I will say, the case manager I had at RRC, her job, she told me, it's not to put you back in prison. My job is to help you be successful. So I've been lucky every step of the way to get somebody that actually gave a damn, whether or not I was successful.
You are a special kind of blessed, and to have even contract staff and a probation officer that's a good PO, that's really good. And remember, you're at least a member of two big Facebook groups that you can reach out. And I like the fact that you're doing that kind of for free. You're not in business. You're not trying to be a consultant, not trying to make money off of any, just kind of doing it for the good. So for you to reach out to these folks and say, hey, I just got out and here's what's going on. I love to see on the Facebook page I run, I love to see the people that got out, and there's just a lot of wisdom and stuff on that page. So that you guys bring to it, because you guys have that lived experience, there's a lot to people that are going on. So all right, then. Well, again, thank you so much, Shelley.
Thank you so much for having me on here. Thank you. I really appreciate it. I enjoy talking with both of you. Bruce, you've been amazing. You've been on point 100% of the time. So without you, I follow you because I know you know what you're talking about. And I'm working on my memoir now, so hopefully I'll be done soon. They'll be coming out and tell the whole story and backstory. So it kind of starts, it starts out at when my family dropped me at the gate, and then it goes to tell the backstory of how I got there. So
I can't wait
to
read
you.
about that. So, all right, folks, well, there it is, another fantastic show for today. Thanks for coming and watching us. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on iHeartMedia. We're on Audible, Amazon. Now we're just really doing so well, and come by our social media pages at concierge_coaches on Instagram, the Concierge Coaches Show on Facebook. I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. And Wayne, how can folks reach you?
Wayne_515@yahoo.com.
Amen. Well, y'all have a good week. We'll see you here next time on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.